The third tetra of mindfulness of breathing, which corresponds to the satipatthana of contemplating the mind, proceeds in the following manner in the Anapanasati Sutta. One trains experiencing the mind I shall breathe in. One trains experiencing the mind I shall breathe out. One trains gladdening the mind I shall breathe in. One trains gladdening the mind I shall breathe out. One trains concentrating the mind I shall breathe in. One trains concentrating the mind I shall breathe out. One trains liberating the mind I shall breathe in. One trains liberating the mind I shall breathe out. Topics to be discussed in relation to this instruction are experiencing the mind, the arising of gladness and concentration, and implications of the reference to liberating the mind. In the instructions translated above, mind renders the Pali term citta. In the early discourses, citta stands predominantly for our subjective mental state. The significance of citta is aptly conveyed by its translation into Chinese, which involves a character that represents the heart. As evident from the listing of different types of cittas in the Satipatthana Sutta, such mental states could be with or without the defilement, like anger, or else concentrated or not concentrated, for example. Another Pali term for the mind is manas, which stands more for the intellective dimension of subjective experience. As the sixth sense, manas stands on a par with the five physical senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, as an avenue of experience. Alternatively, manas serves as the third door of action, where it comes together with bodily and verbal forms of activity. Yet another relevant Pali term is vijnana, usually translated as consciousness. In its general usage, vijnana stands for the quality of knowing that takes in information through any of the six sense doors, including manas. In addition, vijnana also has a central role in relation to continuity during life and from one life to another. In this role, vijnana stands in a reciprocal conditioning relationship with name and form. Although the instructions in the Anapanasati Sutta employ only the term citta, in its explanation of the present step of practice, the Patisambhida Magga brings in a series of different terms for the mind, including manas and vijnana, as well as hadaya, the heart. In the case of vijnana, the Patisambhida Magga mentions not only consciousness as such, but also the aggregate, khanda, of consciousness, and the element, dhatu, of consciousness. From the viewpoint of the Patisambhida Magga, experiencing the mind as the first step in the present tetrad concerns a discernment of mind in its different modalities, including consciousness. Elsewhere in the discourses, citta and vijnana can indeed at times function as near synonyms. From a practical perspective, with the successful calming of mental activity in the previous step, it becomes not possible to have a direct experience of mind as such, when it is in an unperturbed condition, resting in itself and aware of the breath. In this way, the present step of mindfulness of breathing can be related to a concern with the experience of the nature of the mind, prevalent in a range of practice traditions. These practice traditions tend to employ a variety of methods and approaches in order to stimulate the recognition of the nature of the mind. In the tradition of the great perfection, Dzogchen, this can take the form of pointing out instructions given by an accomplished master to students. Among Chan tradition, there is an approach nowadays best known by the Japanese term koan. This approach employs somewhat cryptic sayings or enigmatic statements that are to be contemplated in such a way that, eventually, with a suspension of thought activity, a realization of the nature of the mind takes place. Alternatively, stilling of mental activity through silent sitting is also promoted in some Chan traditions as capable of leading to such an experience. In the present context of mindfulness of breathing, as described in the early Buddhist discourses, a suspension of thought activity has been brought about through the previous steps of practice. This holds in particular for the last two steps of the second tetrad on contemplation of feeling tones. With thoughts and mental activity stilled, mind as such can be experienced. Such experiencing of the mind could be illustrated with the example of hearing, already employed in the previous chapter. A first step in such experiencing requires that we just stay with awareness at the ear sense door and become aware of the fact that we are hearing. Based on this first step of staying at the sense door of the ear, a further step can be taken to arrive at the mind itself. Instead of staying at the ear, awareness now follows the information that is heard inside, as it were, where it is being known by the mind. In the present case, this is ear consciousness. In this way, it becomes possible to pay attention to each of the three dimensions of sense experience, described regularly in the discourses: the sense, its object, and the corresponding consciousness. In the case of hearing, the standard description points out that hearing ear consciousness arises in dependence on the ear and audible objects. By countering the usual tendency to be just absorbed in what is being heard, awareness stays first with the ear itself and next turns to ear consciousness. Turning inside in this way can lead to a direct experience of consciousness. The task here is not to find a specific location where consciousness manifests, as we might physically locate the audible object or the ear that hears the object. Instead, the point is to allow the movement inwards to lead to an encounter with the mind as such, that which knows what is being heard. A comparable experience can take place with the first step of the present tetrad on mind contemplation, when we train ourselves to experience the mind that knows the breath. Having previously experimented with turning inwards in such a way will make it easier to become aware of that which knows inhalations and exhalations, a bare knowing which, due to the calming of mental activity, has become more easily discernible. Turning to the knowing of the alternation between inhalations and exhalations is particularly apt for discerning the nature of the mind, as it directly relates the experience of the mind to the fact of impermanence. The breath being impermanent, the mind that knows the breath must also be impermanent. If the knowing mind were permanent, it could not be cognizing changes in an object like the breath. The very fact that it is possible for us to follow continually the alternations between inhalations and exhalations, and even discern changes occurring within an inhalation or an exhalation, makes it clear that our knowing faculty must also be changing and cannot be some sort of a permanent entity. In spite of the tranquil nature of the mind as such that manifests at this juncture of practice, and in spite of the fact that the ability to know is continuously present in all our experiences, in the end it is nevertheless just a flow, a process of knowing. This sets the appropriate context for the experience of the mind as the first step in the present tetrad of mindfulness of breathing. The very approach used for its recognition is directly conjoined to impermanence. Such conjoining marks a significant contrast to some later practice traditions concerned with recognition of the nature of the mind, where at times a tendency to reification manifests, even to the extent of positing the mind as an unchanging and permanent agent in experience. Such a position is not compatible with early Buddhist thought, where mind or consciousness is seen as a changing process, subject to causes and conditions. In this way, the present step enables placing the powerful experience of the mind as such within its proper context by ensuring that its impermanent nature is not lost sight of. The experience of the mind as such with the present step of practice relies in particular on the two preceding steps of experiencing mental activity and calming it. As mentioned in the previous chapter, experiencing mental activity requires taking a step back, as it were, in order to shift from the experience of happiness to discerning mental activity. The present step requires a further stepping back of the same type, as from discerning and calming mental activity, we move even further inwards towards discerning the mind itself. The progression through these three steps could be illustrated with the example of being in the ocean and having some type of equipment that enables us to continue breathing even when underwater. Experiencing mental activity is similar to floating on the surface of the ocean, experiencing its waves without struggling against them. Calming mental activity corresponds to allowing ourselves to sink down deep into the water where no more waves are felt. Experiencing the mind, in turn, finds illustration in eventually reaching the bottom of the ocean. With the degree of inner tranquility established by calming mental activity, mind as such can be directly apprehended. Once it is no longer covered by its usual overlay of thoughts and associations, let alone colored and clouded by the hindrances or other defilements, with the present step, mind can be apperceived in a condition of bareness, perhaps even nakedness. At times, a sense of awe can accompany such a direct encounter with the mind. As long as this does not lead to any reification of the mind, such a sense of awe can serve as a skillful means to deepen the experience. Turning to the mind itself concords with the general thrust of contemplation of the mind in the Satipatthana Sutta, where recognizing the different mental states listed in the instructions requires an inward monitoring in order to check the current condition of the mind. Instead of the ingrained tendency to give all our attention to what is happening on the outside, the basic requirement for contemplation of the mind is to turn inwards and note how the mind reacts to whatever is happening. The more this tendency is strengthened, the easier it will be to become aware of the condition of the mind in any situation, even in the most challenging circumstances. For the different steps of the present tetrad on contemplation of the mind, this same turning inwards is a central element. This holds also if the present tetrad is used as a launching pad into absorption attainment, which can most conveniently be done with the last step of liberating the mind. I will explore the topic of entry into absorption below when discussing this step. From the viewpoint of the cultivation of insight, apperceiving the mind as such has considerable potential as a pointer to its empty nature. This is an approach that can easily be implemented during walking meditation and any other daily activities, a topic to which I return in more detail at the end of this chapter. All that is required is to stay with the basic quality of knowing, instead of allowing ourselves to be carried away by activity. The principal rule is to remain receptively aware, instead of becoming mentally active. Keeping in mind that this quality of tranquil knowing is impermanent ensures that the mind as such will not be reified into being a permanent entity. Practicing in this way can lead to a growing appreciation of the empty nature of subjective experience. Once the mind rests in itself, this naturally leads to the rising of gladness. In a way, gladness, as well as becoming concentrated, is already a facet of the very experience of the mind as such. so that the two ensuing steps can be considered as fleshing out, with additional detail, what is already implicit in the first step. In this respect, the present tetrad differs from the preceding two tetrads on contemplation of body and feeling tones, which involve a pattern of one step, the first and third, introducing a particular theme or practice, followed by its calming or relaxing in the ensuing step, the second and the fourth. This can be illustrated by relating the respective topics to the corresponding steps for each of the tetrads under discussion. In this way, the topic of the length of the breath, introduced with long breath, leads to the comparatively calmer short breath. Similarly, introducing the whole body leads to calming its activity. Again, pleasant mental states are introduced with joy, leading on to the comparatively calmer happiness. In the same vein, mental activity is first introduced and then calmed. In the present tetrad on contemplation of the mind, however, the trajectory instead leads from the first to the fourth, via two steps that take up aspects of the first step. And the same basic pattern continues with the next tetrad on contemplation of dharmas. In this way, in the present tetrad, all four steps relate to a single topic only, the mind. The reference to gladdening, found in the step under discussion of the mind contemplation tetrad, employs the verb abhipamodati, which is closely related to paramojja, gladness. Gladness belongs to the same type of mental tonality as joy and happiness. In other passages, gladness often serves as the condition for joy to arise, which then leads on to happiness. In the present context, however, gladness occurs at a stage subsequent to the occurrence of joy and happiness, which already came up with the first and second steps of the preceding tetrad on contemplation of feeling tones. The decisive difference from the previously arisen joy and happiness appears to be that gladness arises at the present juncture of practice after mental activities have been calmed. It manifests based on the experience of the mind as such. According to the Patisamvida Magga, with this step of mindfulness of breathing, gladness arises on seeing the unification of the mind that is free from distraction. In this way, whereas joy and happiness functioned in the previous tetrad on contemplation of feeling tones as conditions for calming mental activity, and thereby led to the absence of any distraction, the arising of gladness is the fruition of the calmness brought about by precisely this meditative progression. This accords with the suggestion made above that the gladness manifesting now is in a way a dimension of the experience of the mind as such. In practical terms, the present step involves a shifting of attention to this aspect of gladness as a dimension already inherent in the previous step in a subtle form. Such a shift of attention will lead to an intensification of that gladness. The gladness experienced in the present tetrad on contemplation of the mind is more profound and still than the joy and happiness of the previous tetrad concerned with feeling tones. In fact, the term used is not just pamudati but abhipamudati, with the addition of the prefix abhi, that in Pali can convey a nuance of intensification or superiority. The use of abhipamudati appears to be quite specific to the present context, and could thus be expressing the fact that the gladness arising at this juncture of mindfulness of breathing is different from gladness in other contexts which do not employ the prefix abhi. The superior gladness, if we may call it such, that manifests now is indeed more refined than the earlier joy and happiness. With mental activity gone into abeyance, the gladness experienced is quite profound. It in a way touches us deep within. By way of illustration, we might imagine a swiftly flowing rivulet as an exemplification of the joy experienced with the first step of the previous tetrad on contemplation or feeling tone. Suppose at some point this rivulet enters a large lake. The flowing into the lake illustrates the happiness of the second step of the tetrad on contemplation or feeling tones. There is still some motion, but it is no longer as swift and lively as earlier. Once the water has settled in the midst of the lake and become quiet, this then represents the gladdening of the mind with the second step of the third tetrad on contemplation of the mind. The image is not meant to convey the idea that these are static conditions that invariably manifest in the same manner. Progressing through the 16 steps repeatedly will result in different experiences of joy, for example, or of happiness or gladness. The water simile only aims to illustrate how these three states relate to each other. Joy, happiness, and gladness are just different modalities of a basically positive mental condition conjoined with pleasant feeling tones, all of which can be illustrated with the example of water. The joy is more active, the happiness is in comparison quieter, and the gladdening of the mind more profoundly still. In line with the general shift from mental activities in the previous tetrad to the mind as such in the present tetrad. Over the course of sustained meditative training, each of these three will mature and incline the mind ever more to a deep inner sense of mental composure. A mind that is glad and aware of itself will of its own accord become concentrated. The trajectory here reflects a natural progression described in the discourses in relation to the awakening factors, where tranquility leads to happiness, which in turn results in concentration. The basic dynamic underlying this progression finds application twice during progress through the steps of mindfulness of breathing. The fourth step of calming bodily activity, as one dimension of tranquility, leads on to joy and happiness as the first two steps in the second tetrad on contemplation of feeling tones. This second tetrad ends with calming mental activity, which at the same time completes the cultivation of tranquility by complementing the bodily tranquility achieved earlier. This then leads, via experiencing the mind, to gladness and concentration. This doubling up strengthens the ability of the scheme of mindfulness of breathing to lead into deep concentration. It also explains why, once joy and happiness have already been aroused with the previous tetrad on contemplation of feeling tones, at the present juncture gladness is brought in, namely to lead over to concentration. This second application of the same basic dynamics takes place at a deeper level of the mind than earlier, during the previous tetrad on contemplation of feeling tones. The two in combination can result in profound concentration indeed. Here, the term concentration does not refer to a narrow focus that excludes anything that does not fit into the circumscribed passageway of its restricted field of attention. Instead, in the way of practice described here, the cultivation of concentration carries more flavor of a natural converging, a coming together in an effortless unification of the mind that rests within itself, composed entities. It is as if the whole of subjective experience is held in a loving and caring embrace, such that it becomes completely unified, with no trace of its usual fragmentation left. At this juncture, then, the whole body awareness practiced throughout becomes a whole body and whole mind experience. The previous steps of the present tetrad on contemplation of the mind already involve a lessening of control, and this will become even more prominent with its last step, liberating the mind. Keeping this basic dynamic in mind helps to steer clear of any attempt to force concentration, however subtly, by way of imposing control. Instead, at least at the present juncture of practice, concentration is very much the result of non-interference, of giving up the sense of being in control, and thereby allowing the progression of practice to result in the mind becoming effortlessly composed and unified, settled within and at ease. The reference to liberating the mind is based on the Pali causative verb vimochiti, which conveys the sense of causing something or someone to become liberated or free. The noun vimutti, liberation, holds different meanings in the Pali discourses. The term liberation of the mind, citta vimutti, used on its own, can refer to temporary freedom of the mind from the hindrances. Such liberation relates to the cultivation of tranquility, in particular the attainment of absorption. Liberation of the mind is also possible at levels of concentration falling short of absorption, such as when cultivating the Brahma Viharas. Here liberation takes place by leaving behind any confines, resulting in the boundless experience of a Brahma Vihara. Such boundless experience is, for the time being, liberated from its respective opposite. In the case of metta, for example, the mind is temporarily liberated from ill will. Compassion becomes a liberation of the mind from harming, sympathetic joy from discontent, and equanimity from passion and aversion. In all these cases, liberation is not a final and irreversible condition. The roots of unwholesomeness are still in the mind. Yet, for the time being, these do not manifest, and the mind is temporarily free from them. Liberation by wisdom, panya vimutti, stands for the irreversible type of freedom reached by progressing through the four stages of awakening recognized in early Buddhist thought. This type of freedom is irreversible because certain fetters are abandoned for good and have no scope to manifest again. With such liberation by wisdom, the freed condition of the mind has in turn become unshakable. Liberating the mind from defilements and fetters is the supreme and overarching goal in early Buddhist thought. In this way, the interrelation between tranquility and insight is evident even in the very concept of liberation. Liberations of the tranquility type are not in themselves the final goal of practice, as they do not liberate the mind once and for all from defilements. Nevertheless, they deserve to be reckoned as types of liberation. They do liberate, even if only temporarily, and are for this very reason an integral part of the path to final liberation. The different nuances carried by the term vimutti, as used in the Pali discourses, leave considerable room for interpreting the injunction to liberate the mind in the final step of the third tetrad on contemplation of the mind. As mentioned briefly in the previous chapter, when cultivating mindfulness of breathing, the present step seems the most natural choice for entering into absorption, which requires that the mind be completely liberated from even the slightest trace of any hindrance. Although the Anapanasati Sutta does not explicitly mention absorption in its actual instructions, the trajectory of deepening mental tranquility that underlies the previous and the present tetrad naturally leads to a point where the mind can be allowed to enter absorption naturally. In what follows, I will explore this option on the understanding that, similar to my discussion of some of the preliminaries to mindfulness of breathing in the first chapter, what I present here goes to some extent beyond the actual instructions in the discourse. Applied to actual practice, if the mind inclines towards deep concentration, we might proceed swiftly through the first three tetrads and then allow it to enter absorption, simply by refraining from any further interference. During progression through the steps leading up to liberating the mind, for some practitioners, an inner experience of light manifests. This can already start quite early and emerge more fully with the first step of the present tetrad, experiencing the mind. The next step of gladdening the mind can then lead to an increase in brightness, and the subsequent step of concentrating the mind can foster its stability. The way the light appears depends on the degree of inner collectedness the mind has acquired. By deepening and strengthening that collectedness, the light becomes stable. In later practice traditions, such inner light experiences are often referred to with the term nimitta, literally a sign or mark that is characteristic of something experienced and thereby enables us to recognize it. In the context of cultivating deeper stages of tranquility, the nimitta then refers to the sign or mark of the concentrated mind. Although concern with the cultivation of such a nimitta is characteristic of later tradition, a precedent can be found in the Upakilesa Sutta, which reports that the Buddha and some of his disciples encountered inner light experiences during their gradual cultivation of concentration. In the Upakilesa Sutta, the experience of inner light and forms only serves to reflect whether the mind is becoming more concentrated or else has succumbed to some minor defilement that obstructs entry to absorption. The discourse does not give the impression that the light itself should become the object of meditation. In fact, no object of meditation is described at all. This holds similarly for the standard account of absorption attainment in the discourses, which describes the condition of the mind by listing the mental factors characteristic of a particular level of absorption, but without any additional reference to an object employed for entering absorption. Now, the experience of unification possible with absorption implies a merger of the subject and the object. Such an experience of merging could in principle be considered from the viewpoint of the subject experiencing the merger or from the viewpoint of the meditative object with which the subject has merged. Whereas in later exegetical tradition the emphasis appears to be more on the object, the standard account of absorption in the discourses instead places more emphasis on the subject. This need not imply that the experience of absorption itself must be substantially different for one following the discourses or else later exegesis. It would only imply a different perspective on how to enter and abide in absorption. From this viewpoint, the standard descriptions of the four absorptions do mention object in a way, namely the mind. If I read the position taken by the discourses correctly here, the mind in absorption is a way of its own absorbed condition. Such emphasis on the subjective, in the standard account of absorption in the discourses, is the same for any meditation topic, and therefore sufficient for any mode of practice. The perspective taken in this way throws into relief the main task, abiding in a condition of the mind in which the absorption factors are strongly present. Giving full importance to this main task would also facilitate discerning when the stability of the mind, required to remain in absorption, gets slightly weaker, evident in a subtle shakiness or feebleness of one of the absorption factors. On being noticed immediately due to the overall emphasis on the mind itself, this can then quickly be remedied. By pointing out that the description in the Upakilesa Sutta does not present the experience of light as the object of the practice, I do not intend to imply that there's anything wrong in focusing on the light once it has become naturally bright and stable. My point is only that this mode of practice is not evident in the Upakilesa Sutta, and although for many meditators it can be a very powerful approach, it need not be considered the only possible route into absorption. The light nimitta reflects the condition of our mind just as a mirror reflects the condition of our face. If we see some spot on the face, we will clean the face and not the mirror. Similarly, for the light nimitta to become stable, the mind needs to be cultivated accordingly. That is, the main concern can be throughout with the mind itself that has become already evident with the first step of the present tetrad. Such experiencing the mind, in its condition of knowing the breath, can continue to inform the gradual progression towards entry into absorption, in line with what is the main theme of the present tetrad, the mind. The instruction to liberate the mind can in turn be taken to refer to a stepping back from any interference. Last obstacle that could still be preventing absorption can indeed be the sense of being in control. Once this has been let go of, absorption takes over, and we find ourselves immersed in deep bliss and peace. The mind has become so finely balanced that entry into absorption can occur as if of its own accord, in a seamless manner. The result is an experience of complete unification of the mind, in which the subject-object duality vanishes. Such unification is the fruition of the previous practices, where the contentment of having maintained basic moral conduct enabled experiencing the pleasant feeling tone of being in the present moment, which in turn facilitated the arising of joy and happiness, and the eventual calming of mental activity, as a result of which the mind finally rested in itself with gladness and collectedness. With this whole trajectory in place, liberating the mind can simply take the form of relinquishing any attempt to exercise further control over it. The idea of a simple act of relinquishment could be related to a definition of the faculty, indriya, of concentration, found in several discourses in the Samyutta Nikaya. According to this definition, concentration and unification of the mind can be gained on having made letting go the object, vasakkarammanam karitva. In addition to the supreme type of letting go when experiencing nirvana, this expression could also be taken to inspire an approach to deepening concentration by way of thoroughly letting go at a more ordinary level. Based on the previously established conditions, such letting go will indeed lead to an intensification of concentration. In this way, taking the step of liberating the mind in the sense of thoroughly letting go can serve to tap the potential of mindfulness of breathing to lead into deep concentration. Such letting go of the last vestige of control builds on the way in which the progression through the first three tetrads has enriched the condition of the mind, an enriching that implicitly covers not only the cultivation of satipatthana, but also the awakening factors, a topic to which I will come back in chapter 6. Alternatively, a slightly more structured approach to absorption could be employed. This could be achieved by formulating an aspiration, a topic already broached in relation to joy in the previous chapter. Such an aspiration, made in the attitude of a reverential invitation, could in the present case be formulated for the five factors that are characteristic of the first absorption. These are as follows in Pali, followed by English renditions that express my personal understanding of their respective significance as factors of absorption. Vitakka, application of the mind. Vichara, sustaining of the mind. Piti, joy. Sukha, happiness. Ekaggata, unification. The aspiration could be made by employing just the Pali terms. In fact, the implications of the first two factors are debated, and not everyone will necessarily be comfortable with the translations I have supplied. Much depends on whether we take vitakka in the present context as a reference to thought activity. A close examination of relevant passages and the perspective provided by translations into Chinese makes it, in my view, preferable to consider vitakka in the context of absorption as distinct from fully-fledged conceptual thought activity. Hence, I prefer to understand vitakka as application of the mind when it serves as a factor of the first absorption. Be that as it may, By employing the Pali term, we can avoid taking a definite stance on one or the other interpretation of vitakka in relation to the first absorption. Having formulated an aspiration or reverential invitation for the absorption factors to manifest with full strength, we then wait in a receptive manner for the invited factors to do so. Once all five factors are fully manifest in the mind, we could then formulate an aspiration for the first absorption to manifest, for example, Patamang Jhanam Gosampaja Vihareyam. May I dwell having attained the first absorption. With each of these aspirations, the key point is not to issue commands to ourselves, but much rather to invite something to manifest on its own. We set up the conditions and invite, without any attempt to control. For those who are not comfortable with the idea of such an invitation, simply paying attention to the five factors of absorption can serve the same purpose. The progression through the previous steps of mindfulness of breathing has in fact already laid the groundwork for these five factors of absorption to manifest fully. The focus developed with the first two steps of the body contemplation tetrad, long and short breath, can be seen as a precedent for the manifestation of vitakka in the sense of an initial application of the mind. The shift with the ensuing steps to a broader mode of attention that continues on the trajectory of absence of distraction, by keeping the inhalations and exhalations in peripheral awareness, resembles the role of vichara as a sustained application of the mind, which to some degree is in fact already required during the first two steps of body contemplation. Joy and happiness are explicitly mentioned in the first two steps of the tetrad on contemplation of feeling tones. Concentration as the third step in the present tetrad brings to fulfillment the quality of unification of the mind. Understood from this perspective, the progression through the first 12 steps of mindfulness of breathing has gradually put in place precisely those mental conditions that can ripen into absorption attainment. The Visuddhimagga indeed understands the present step to imply liberating the mind so that absorption can take place. According to its presentation, this could be liberation from anything that might obstruct entry into the first absorption, or else liberation from those mental factors of a lower absorption that need to be left behind in order to dwell in a higher absorption. The Visuddhimagga also brings in the topic of insight, suggesting that on emerging from an absorption, one should contemplate it with insight as impermanent, dukkha, and devoid of self. The Patisambhida Magga lists various defilements from which the mind could be liberated with the present step, including conceit, mana. Ajahn Buddhadasa has made a related suggestion, associating the present step in particular to cultivating insight into the futility of clinging to anything as I or mine. In practical terms, on adopting this perspective, the experience of the breath can be divested altogether of self-reference, of all conceited notions of an I that breathes, and of any appropriation of the breath, or any other phenomena related to it, as mine. Simply said, the task would be to breathe without the breather. Once we learn to step out of selfing in relation to breathing, it becomes easier to do the same in relation to other aspects of our experience as well. Practicing in this way prepares the ground for an emphasis on the cultivation of insight in the next tetrad on contemplation of dharmas. Bringing in the characteristic of not-self also complements the continuous awareness of impermanence, evident in the alternations between inhalations and exhalations, that underlies the whole scheme of practice. On adopting this interpretation, the mind can come to be, at least temporarily, liberated from self-reference. Training ourselves in associating the step of liberating the mind with emptiness can take on an intriguing dimension. This dimension emerges once the alternative route of entry into absorption is taken. due to previous training in associating the step with emptiness. Such entry into absorption can come together with a sense of non-identification. Experiencing absorption without having any identification with it, without a sense of I am the one who attains it. Such a lack of identification is reflected in a series of discourses in which Sariputta reports his ability to enter any level of absorption without any sense of an I in relation to such attainment. Ananda relates this to the fact that Sariputta had for a long time overcome all underlying tendency to conceit and to the construing of a sense of I and mine. Due to previously developed insight, an experience of deep concentrative states can take place entirely free from any tendency to selfing and appropriation. Following the example set by Sariputta, a powerful utilization of the union of tranquility and insight becomes possible, where the empty mind naturally rests in deep concentration, and the very quality of being empty itself takes care of any possible distraction. Even the slightest tendency of the mind to depart from its absorbed condition can just be allowed to dissolve into emptiness by being discerned as void of I and mine. The suggestion of conjoining tranquility and insight is not meant to imply that insight is to be cultivated while actually being absorbed. Descriptions of the experience of absorption in the early discourses point to a condition of deep mental tranquility, such that it would not be possible to be immersed in absorption and at the same time be contemplating insight into impermanence, for example. The point I am making here is only that previously cultivated insight, in particular an understanding of emptiness, can continue to inform the actual experience of meditative absorption and can serve as an aid when the mind is not yet, or no longer, fully in an absorbed condition due to some minor distraction. Comparing the present tetra to the corresponding contemplation of the mind in the Satipatthana Sutta shows again that the Anapanasati Sutta to some degree builds on what the former has established. Contemplation of the mind in the Satipatthana Sutta requires a clear recognition of pairs of mental states, the last of which is the liberated mind, in contrast to the not liberated mind. Whereas in the Satipatthana Sutta the task is recognition, the Anapanasati Sutta shows how to achieve a liberated mind, which forms the culmination point of the present tetrad. Moreover, the trajectory that leads up to liberating the mind in the Anapanasati Sutta more explicitly reflects the important contribution that cultivation of tranquility makes to progress toward liberation. It shows how with mindfulness of breathing, the not concentrated mind can gradually evolve to becoming a concentrated mind, two categories listed in the Satipatthana Sutta under contemplation of the mind. For walking meditation, two steps from the present tetrad could be taken up for practice. The first step of experiencing the mind would naturally build on the type of walking meditation described in the previous chapter in relation to contemplation of feeling tone. There, the calming of mental activity led to a thought-free experience of walking, which can easily be developed further by becoming aware of the mind as such. This mode of practice has a remarkable potential to bring inner balance and lack of attachment to any situation or activity. Such potential is based on reversing the natural tendency of the mind to reach out for whatever object presents itself and then to react to it. If instead the internal experience of our own mind is given prominence, this tendency is countered, and we learn to recognize clearly what is taking place within, in our own mind. The question is no longer what others should or should not have done, but the question throughout is how our own mind handles that. Building on the ability to stay attuned to what happens in the mind, the last step in the present tetrad on contemplation of the mind would fall into place in the way just described above, which is liberating the mind from selfing. In this way, walking meditation can become a walking in emptiness. The same holds for other activities. All of these can be avoided of self-referencing, of I-making and my-making. This has the surprising result that whatever we have to do is performed with more ease and increased efficiency. In addition, it becomes an integral part of the path to the final goal of full liberation, whereby all tendency to selfing and ego-centeredness will be left behind for good. Summary. Based on the calming of mental activity brought about with the previous tetrad on contemplation of feeling tones, mind as such can be experienced in its bare condition. As this experience results from turning inwards towards that which knows, the alternation between inhalation and exhalations, the changing nature of this knowing quality is apparent throughout. This enables a profound experience of the mind as such, without leaving room for reifying it as a permanent entity. Gladness and concentration are to some extent already dimensions of the experience of the mind as such. Turning attention to them deepens their manifestation. The trajectory underlying the present tetrad on contemplation of the mind has a prominent flavor of tranquility, which for some practitioners leads to the manifestation of an inner light. With the experiences of gladness and concentration, the light tends to become brighter and more stable. Moving on to liberating the mind can then lead to entry into absorption, which, although not explicitly mentioned in the Anapanasati Sutta, is a natural result of the trajectory of practice up to the present point. An entry point for absorption could simply be a thorough letting go, or else an aspiration for absorption to arise could be employed. Opting instead for the cultivation of insight could find its expression in liberating the mind from all conceit and sense of self-reference by breathing without a breather. Such de-identification and de-appropriation of experience can carry over into daily life activity and even inform entry into absorption, all of which can become integral dimensions of a gradual deepening of insight into emptiness.